darkness, chaos, figures rushing about, the stench of decay heavy in the air. He turns, determined to raise the alarm, to let the others know the attack is underway. A figure is suddenly there before him, blocking the way to the exit. He pauses, and that is his mistake. A moment of chilling cold as something shoves its way into his flesh, then pain, terrible pain. A hand grasps the back of his neck, pulling him closer, driving whatever it is farther into his body.
Die, you bastard!
As darkness threatens, a face looms before him. A familiar face.
Rot in hell, fool!
Cade jerked his hand free, stopping the flow of images. Duncan opened his mouth to ask what Cade had seen, but the expression of rage on the commander's face caused him to swallow his question unasked. He watched in amazement as Cade surged to his feet and stalked across the room to where the Perceptor's aide, Donaldson, was being tended by two of the other soldiers. Pushing them aside, Cade reached down, seized the injured man by his lapels, and hauled him to his feet.
You son of a bitch! Where are they?
Several of the other knights rushed forward, intent on helping Donaldson, but Riley and Olsen swiftly interposed themselves between the injured man and his would-be rescuers, protecting their superior with guns drawn. Duncan could only kneel there, stunned. The tension in the room going from bad to worse.
Preceptor Michaels is dead.
And this piece of shit is the reason!
Kate tossed Donaldson to the floor in disgust and anger.
He lowered the wards and let the enemy in through some kind of back door. When Michaels discovered his treachery, Donaldson killed him.
Cade stood back and watched as Duncan marched over to Donaldson and began questioning him under the watchful eyes of the locals.
You okay, boss?
Cade turned to find Riley at his elbow, watching him.
Yeah, that son of a bitch did this. He knows where that bastard Logan is. He might even know how to find the adversary. He's gonna tell us what he knows, and I intend to make him pay for what he's done here.
But it didn't look like Duncan was getting anywhere. His questions were met with silence. Donaldson stared at the floor, ignoring everything that was said to him. Cade glanced around, taking in the positions of the men in the room. His gaze fell upon the doors that had once guarded the entrance to the secondary vault. Duncan stepped over to his teammates.
We're not getting anywhere, so we're gonna take him upstairs to one of the interview rooms and let him stew for a while. And then we'll take another shot at him. Don't worry, we'll get what we need out of him.
Cade ignored the statement. He had already decided on another course of action, and it didn't involve further delay. He remained standing between Olsen and Riley, waiting for his chance. Duncan took charge of the knights. With him in the lead, the small group made its way toward the exit.
Out of hell with this!
Cade waited until the group had come abreast of him, then made his move. He stepped between his men, reached out, and grabbed Donaldson. He pulled him close, one arm around the man's neck, the other holding the barrel of his pistol to Donaldson's head. Everyone, including Riley and Olsen, were taken by surprise. They stepped toward him, but Cade had wasted as much time as he intended to, and he let them know it.
Don't even think about it. I'll put a bullet through his brain faster than you can think. I don't need him alive to discover what he knows.
It was a bluff, pure and simple, designed to let his men know that he hadn't completely lost it, at the same time using his reputation to keep the other knights at bay. It worked, for the group froze where they stood, waiting to see what he would do. Cade had timed his move perfectly and stood with his back to the pile of debris on which the steel doors that once guarded the entrance to the secondary vault now rested. He needed time to question Donaldson properly, needed the freedom to do it his way. He didn't stop to think, didn't stop to analyze the possible success or failure of what he intended to do. Instead, he simply threw himself backward at the reflective surface of the doors without letting go of the stranglehold on Donaldson. As the rest of the soldiers in the room watched in shocked surprise, Cade and his unwilling passenger struck the reflective surface of the doors and disappeared into the beyond. The sun was just rising over the treetops when Cade appeared at the gate outside the commandery. Word of what had happened in the reliquary must have spread, for he noted that the guards opened the gate and waved him through without a word. He noted the fear in their eyes as he passed. One soldier even crossed himself when he thought the other man wasn't looking. And with that, the legend of the heretic grew. Cade had one of the guards transport him down the long drive and to the manor house. Once inside, he went immediately to the preceptor's office. Two guards stood outside, but they made no move to stop him as he stepped up to the doors, found them unlocked, and disappeared inside the office. After that, it only took him a few more moments to get the video conferencing equipment powered up. Placing the call, he stood in front of the screen, waiting for the connection to be made. The call went through quickly. Cade wasn't surprised to find that someone had been specifically detailed to wait for any incoming messages. The higher-ups would want to know as much as possible, as soon as possible. When Cardinal Giovanni finally appeared, however, it was clear that he was disappointed to see Cade.
Knight Commander Williams, where, may I ask, is Preceptor Michaels?
I'm sorry to report that Preceptor Michaels is dead, Your Eminence.
What happened?
Cade explained how Michaels had died, and what he had learned from his interrogation of Donaldson. How the traitor had disabled the wards and granted the necromancer's troops access to the grounds, how he had led them into the manor house and down through the lower levels to the reliquary itself, how he had fooled the preceptor into opening the sanctuary to the very enemy he was trying to protect it from. He saved the worst for last.
The council probably has the spear in its possession by now, Eminence. Logan more than likely also has a significant number of other artifacts along with it. The investigation team is still trying to determine what was destroyed versus what is missing from the reliquary.
I don't need to tell you how dangerous this situation has become, do I, Knight Commander?
No, Your Eminence, you don't. That's why I've taken the liberty of calling up both Echo and Bravo teams and putting them on combat alert. Donaldson gave us the locations of the Council's stronghold in Louisiana. I intend to stage a combined air and land assault against it before nightfall. All I need is your approval, sir.
I don't even truly need that, but it doesn't hurt to play nice in the sandbox now and then.
Of course, Knight Commander. You have my permission to do whatever, and I repeat, whatever is necessary to recover the spear.
Thank you, sir.
As Cade reached for the disconnect button, the Cardinal leaned forward.
What have you done with the traitor, Knight Commander?
I've got him secured in a place where he can't cause any further harm.
When we finish with the necromancer and recover the spear, we'll want to see to it that justice is served.
Have no fear, Your Eminence. Justice will be served. I'll take care of it personally.
Olson, Riley, and Duncan had just finished eating when Cade strode into the dining hall. The Knight Commander was still dressed in the same clothing he had worn the night before, bloodstains and all. And conversation among the other tables drifted to a stop as the rest of the men in the room got a good look at him. Cade barely noticed the effect he was having on those around him as he crossed to where Olson was sitting and laid a piece of paper on the table before him. On it was the address in southern Louisiana that Donaldson had given to him.
I need to know as much as possible about that location, and I need it in 30 minutes.
He turned to Riley.
That's how long you have to assemble the squad leaders from Echo and Bravo teams and get them in the air with their men to the Lafayette Commandery in Louisiana. We'll meet them there later this afternoon. We're running out of time and I don't intend to waste another minute more.
Duncan got to his feet, a confused look on his face.
Where is Donaldson?
Cade ignored him, still concentrating on Riley.
We're going after that spear. I want the Black Hawk pilots on alert and the armorers ready to outfit the assault teams. Be certain...
What did you do with Donaldson?
Silence fell. The two men stared at each other.
Duncan, I don't think now is a good...
Duncan cut him off with a wave of his hand without taking his attention from Cade.
I asked you a question, sir. I want to know what happened to Donaldson.
Cade placed both fists on the table and leaned forward so that his face was inches from Duncan's own.
I left him behind, where he belongs.
Duncan pulled back, the confusion on his face evident. Cade watched as a look of horror slowly crossed the younger man's face, but the commander was past caring. He'd spent the last 3 hours forcing the location of the Council's stronghold out of the traitor, hours that should have been spent going after the spear. He no longer had the time to cater to the other man's precious sense of fair play. The necromancer and his allies had declared war. Cade intended to give them one. He turned away, believing the conversation to be finished.
You killed him!
Cade stared directly into the younger man's eyes.
No. I left him in the beyond.
With grim satisfaction, Cade remembered looking back from the edge of the portal to where Donaldson stood in the middle of a mist-encircled field in the beyond. In the distance, The sounds of the oncoming specters that had picked up their scent could be heard. Drowning out the man's pleas for mercy, Eskade returned to the real world without him. The Echo team leader watched Duncan's eyes grow wider as the impact of his statement registered, and he couldn't resist a parting shot.
Considering what was closing in on him, I'd say that killing him would have been a blessing, which is precisely why I left him alive and well.
The room was absolutely silent as he turned on his heel and walked out. 7 hours later, the command elements for both Echo and Bravo teams were assembled in a large conference room on the second floor of the training center at the Lafayette Commandery in Louisiana. Riley Olson and Duncan had been joined by the rest of Echo Team squad leaders: Martinez, First Squad's Fiery Latino; Wilson, Second Squad's Temperamental Preacher; Baker and Lyons, Third and Fourth Squad's Grizzled Veterans. Also present were the four officers from Bravo Team. The rest of the two team's members were waiting in the main facility, one floor below them. Several freestanding bulletin boards were set up in the front of the room. One contained a map of the state of Louisiana, with the target site circled in red southwest of where they presently were. Another contained old sepia photographs of a plantation house. Each of its two stories was surrounded by a wide veranda with prominent columns. On the right side, the home was connected to what appeared to be a two-story greenhouse or conservatory. Several photos showed additional buildings, a stable, a garage, others whose purposes were not immediately apparent. A wider angle photo on the next board showed how the lawn ran down to the water's edge, where a boathouse had been built next to a dock that extended out into the bayou itself. Duncan paid close attention to the photos, memorizing as much of the detail as possible. In the heat of a major firefight, things could get confusing very quickly, and he didn't want to be at a disadvantage if he became separated from the main assault group.
All right, listen up. As you know, several of our commanderies have been attacked this week. We've managed to identify the group behind the assaults, and it's my intention to carry the battle to them this time. Riley?
A large picture appeared on the wall behind Cade as Riley switched on the projector at the back of the room. The picture was of a man in his mid-30s with dark hair and beard, dressed in shabby and ill-fitted clothes. Duncan thought he had the lean look of a man fallen on hard times, despite the fire in the man's eyes.
This is Simon Logan, a self-styled necromancer and leader of a group that calls itself the Council of Nine. We don't know much about them, other than a few basics. They've always been fringe players, minor league at best, without any real talent or ability. Given the number of genuine threats we face on a regular basis, worrying about the wannabes is usually counterproductive, and so we ignored the Council in favor of bigger targets. As it turns out, that was a mistake. During the last few months, Logan and his followers have increased their knowledge of the dark arts to levels we never imagined they'd be able to achieve. My personal belief is that they've had some outside help. They've moved ahead too quickly to have done this on their own, but we do not yet have any concrete, tangible proof to that effect. Logan hasn't been seen in public in almost 3 years, yet all indications suggest he's still alive and running the show. His core group of followers, the Nine from the group's name, are seen only slightly more often. Though we don't have anything better than blurry photos of men in hooded robes in an undisclosed location. Personal information on them is practically non-existent. Next slide, please.
The image of Logan was replaced by a blurry image of the plantation house. It had been taken from a distance, probably from a boat out on the bayou, and this time was in color. The quality was poor, but even so, the men could see that the structure had fallen into disrepair, and the bayou had long since begun its encroachment on the property.
This is the plantation as it is today, or so we think. No one has been allowed on the property for several years. The man who took the picture, a real estate developer looking to make a big score, had just come back from a clandestine visit to the site 3 years ago when he was killed in a hit-and-run accident while getting out of his car to visit a local coffee shop. The photo was the only one the police were able to develop from the camera that he'd left on the front seat of his car. Next. This is the Spear of Destiny, also known as the Spear of Longinus. It is the weapon used by the Roman soldier of the same name to pierce the side of Christ at the crucifixion. For hundreds of years, people have believed that the weapon was either in the hands of the Vatican, safely ensconced in one of the pilasters that formed the framework of Michelangelo's dome, or in a display case in the Hofburg Treasure House in Vienna. I suspect you've all heard the news by now. Until last night, the real spear was under our control in a special vault. What you probably haven't heard is that we were betrayed from within. A man named Donaldson, the preceptor's personal aide, was in fact a mole working for the council. As a result, Preceptor Michaels lost his life, and the spear, along with several other important relics, vanished into the night in the hands of Logan's followers. It's our job to bring them back. We believe that Logan's men have returned to their headquarters in northern Louisiana, and that they are unaware that we are on to them. They will more than likely remain at that location, believing they are safe, at least for the time being. It is my intention to use that false sense of security to our advantage. By this time tomorrow, I expect that facility to be in the hands of our order.
Cade revealed a large-scale map of the local area. The plantation's position was prominently noted.
Echo Team will take ground transportation to here.
He indicated a landing some miles away on the edge of the bayou.
A guide has been arranged to take us through the swamp so we can approach the plantation from the swamp. Bravo Team will be inbound in the Blackhawks by then.
Kay turned to face the Bravo commanders.
I want the men offloaded and the choppers back out of the way as quickly as possible, understood?
The men nodded grimly.
Echo will take the plantation house, Bravo the surrounding buildings. Once the spear is secured, we'll get it out of there aboard one of the choppers, then destroy the rest of the vermin. Questions?
Carita was first.
What can we expect by way of resistance?
We're not entirely certain. The council had 9 key members. We know 2 are dead. What we don't know is how many followers might be there on the property with the rest. We do know they are capable of calling forth a variety of nether creatures. We've faced revenants, specters, and one minor demon in the last 3 days alone. So be prepared for anything once we hit the ground. We're going to be going in fast and hard, with surprise on our side. But if we get bogged down in a long firefight, the odds will be on their side.
Firepower?
Again, uncertain. Though all of the council members we've seen to date have eschewed weaponry in favor of their ritual magic.
Well, what are the rules of engagement regarding prisoners?
I don't expect there to be any, as they're not the type to surrender. If by some strange chance they do, you've got to be extremely careful that it's not just a ploy to bring you within their reach. Cuffs, gags, and blindfolds at a minimum on every prisoner. You have to be absolutely certain that they cannot make use of their arcane abilities.
Understood.
We'll have one chance at this, gentlemen. Once they know we're on to them, they disappear like rats into the woodwork. The spear is too dangerous to leave in their hands. We cannot allow that to happen.
Cade caught the attention of 4th Squad's commander.
Lyons, would you do the honors?
Yes, sir.
Lyons bowed his head and waited a moment for the rest of the men in the room to do the same.
Lord, we are your humble servants, ever mindful of our duty and obligations. Tonight we once again go into battle in your name. Stand with us. Grant us the peace and protection afforded your servants in such times of strife. I ask that you watch over every man that bears your sword this night. Fill their hearts with courage and their souls with peace. And if it's their time to join you in heaven, welcome them into your home with open arms. We ask this in the name of your precious Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
There will be a special mass at sundown should any of you want to receive communion before going into battle. Immediately following the service, we'll meet on the grounds to board the choppers. Duncan, Riley, and Olson, I need to speak to you. The rest of you are dismissed.
Once the room had cleared, Kate addressed his command team separately.
Recovering the spear is our objective. Everything else, including the welfare of our men, is secondary to that. No matter what happens, we are going after the spear. Is that understood?
The 3 men nodded.
Olson, I want you in a chopper overhead with a sniper rifle. Tell one of the Bravo snipers to do the same in another. Once the assault begins, you are free to pick and choose your targets. Concentrate on the council members and anyone who appears to be attempting ritual magic. Warning shots are unnecessary.
Right.
Riley, you're with me. We're going in with 1st Squads as part of the ground unit. Once on the property, it will be our job to locate and retrieve the spear.
Got it, boss.
Kay dismissed them with a wave of his hand and turned back to study the maps for the fifth time that afternoon, wondering just what surprises the necromancer and possibly the adversary had in store for them. After Mass, Riley, Olson, and Duncan walked to the armory, where Cade had been waiting for them. It was the team's habit of suiting up together, and that day was no exception. They gathered in a small anteroom off the main chamber, where the rest of Echo and Bravo teams had assembled. First, they pulled on a set of dark gray ceramic body armor that had been blessed by the Holy Father himself after its construction. Next were jumpsuits of black flame-retardant material that went over the body armor. In shoulder holsters, each man carried the standard-issue HK Mark 23 45 caliber handgun, complete with a 12-round magazine, a flash suppressor, and a laser targeting device. Two spare magazines for the pistols were affixed with Velcro to their left wrists. A combat knife was either affixed to their belts or in calf sheaths on the outside of their boots. Their swords, recently blessed again during Mass, were then slung across their backs, the hilt of the weapon extending just beyond their right shoulders for easy access. Lightweight Kevlar tactical helmets with built-in communications gear were worn on their heads. Along with their pistols, each of the knights also carried his weapons of choice. For Riley, it was a Mossberg 590 12-gauge combat shotgun. He also carried a variety of plastic explosives and other detonation devices in the chest webbing he wore over his jumpsuit, in case they needed some demolition work during the assault. Olson had swapped his usual Barrett Light 50 caliber sniper rifle for something lighter. Stationed as he would be in the moving Black Hawk, the Barrett would be too awkward to use effectively, but a Marine-issue M48-3 would do the trick just fine. He also had a selection of throwing knives in a custom-made sheath strapped to his left arm between shoulder and elbow. Kate and Duncan both carried HP MP510 submachine guns loaded with their trademark double magazines, giving them 60 rounds of available firepower before they'd need to reload. Kate ordered the sergeants to get the loading started and followed them out into the fading afternoon sunlight just as the Blackhawks touched down on the lawn nearby. The sight of the nine choppers started Kate's blood pumping. This had always been the time he liked best, when the op was getting underway, and he knew that soon he would once again be put to the test. He was headed for what would probably be the most dangerous assignment the Order had ever given him, and yet he felt a sense of calm, of peace, a feeling that this was what he had been born to do. He stepped up onto the Black Hawk skid and signaled for the unit to get going. As the chopper lifted into the air, the setting sun streamed out over the Lafayette Commandery below him, and Kate found himself wondering idly if he would live to see its walls again. Then, as the choppers turned as one to the west, Kate's thoughts turned to the details of the mission before him. The time for questions was over. It was time for action. Simon Logan stared down at the weapon in the carrying case before him, with a mixture of fear, awe, and barely suppressed elation. The final raid on the Templar Commandery had been a smashing success. His men had acted with more skill than he'd expected, taking several other key artifacts from the Templar vaults, an act that would be lavishly rewarded. The spear had been secured in the special carrying case designed for just that purpose. The other items packed away in whatever materials they had at hand, and the assault team had escaped as quickly and as silently as they had arrived. The traitor had played his role well. And apparently, he'd been justly rewarded for his treachery. The necromancer had not been unhappy to hear that Donaldson had been trapped in the room's collapse as his men had made their exit. It was one less pawn to be concerned about. And now, the legendary Spear of Longinus belonged to him. Cautiously, the necromancer reached out with one gnarled hand and ran a finger along the spear shaft, a surge of power shooting up his arm. He'd been afraid the godly nature of the weapon would strike out against him, and was pleased to discover his fears had been unfounded. With considerably more confidence, he reached into the case, wrapped his fingers around the weapon, and pulled it free of the clasps that held it in place. The spear came to life. Raw power flowed through the necromancer, more power than he'd ever felt in his life. The gray haze through which he had begun to see the world was thrown back. Vibrant colors and sounds assaulted his senses, as if a veil had been torn free, and he was seeing the world for the first time as it truly was. Possibilities unfolded before him, and he could see the righteousness of his path, knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that he was destined to hold this weapon in his hand, that it had traveled through the years just to arrive here, at this time, at this place, so that he might raise it up against his foes. The boats moved smoothly through the water under the powerful strokes of the oars. All the men were under noise discipline, but Cade realized that it really wasn't necessary. As darkness had settled, the swamp had come alive with sound. The going was slow. Gator nests, currents, and submerged logs large enough to swamp their boats presented more than enough problems. Eventually, their guide, a wizened old man who'd fished these parts for years and who believed he was leading law enforcement personnel on a drug raid, turned to Cade.
We getting close. 10-15 more minutes max.
Cade nodded his understanding and signaled the men. Weapons were quickly checked, safeties taken off. The men shifted their positions slightly, preparing for the need to evacuate the boats quickly and silently. Slowly, they closed on their destination. Up ahead, a light could be seen cutting through the trees. As they emerged from a narrow channel into a wider passage, they came upon an incongruous sight. Rising out of the water was the statue of a stone cherub, its wings spread wide, smiling in frozen joy. A few feet away, a moss-covered Celtic cross also broke the surface. Several yards to their left, the remains of a small stone building could be seen on the nearby shore. The tall grass on either side gave glimpses of other forgotten monuments.
What is this place?
It's what's left of the old Spanish mission. In late colonial days, the local parish wouldn't let the unsaved be buried in town, so most of them were carted out here. Lots full of thieves and murderers and unbaptized infants. Some say the place is haunting.
And you?
I think there are things on this earth man ain't supposed to bother with. This place is one of them. Let's move along.
They continued forward and soon found themselves over the center of the submerged cemetery. A few markers rose above the surface, and as they steered between them, several other forgotten graves could be seen beneath the waterline. Cade felt a sudden burst of power across his entire body, a sensation not unlike touching a live wire with his bare hand. It was so unexpected that he sat down abruptly, alarming those in the boat with him and forcing their guide to hold up his hand in the signal to stop. The five boats coasted to a stop with Cade's boat in the lead and the others spread out behind it in an inverted V. As the feeling faded, Cade gave himself a quick once-over, confirming that he was physically uninjured, but that didn't assuage the growing unease he felt. That's when the trap was sprung. Several forms surged out of the water around each boat, surprising the men inside them. Hands reached for the gunwales as the moss-covered faces of the corpses risen from the depths of the swamp screamed at the men who faced them. Cade didn't even have time to draw his sword as a revenant swarmed over the side right on top of him. He went down beneath its form, his hands locked about its throat in an effort to keep its teeth from sinking into his own neck. The vessel farthest to the left was immediately overturned, the knights inside disappearing into the murky water below. They would not resurface. The others were more fortunate, the action from the men on board preventing further mishaps. But the attack was on in earnest. As Cade struggled to keep the revenant from biting into his neck, Riley jumped to his defense. The Master Sergeant's boot shot forward and knocked the revenant's head clear off its body. Around him, other knights were fighting back, falling on the attacking revenants with their swords and combat knives. The battle was swift and deadly. By the time the assault team had destroyed the last of the revenants, they had five casualties and three wounded knights. It was not an auspicious beginning. Knowing time was running out, Cade regrouped his own team and got them headed toward the target again. 300 yards later, they emerged from narrow grassy channels into a wider, lake-like area. Pulling out a pair of low-light binoculars, Cade surveyed their target. From here he could see that the bayou had taken to reclaiming the land on which the plantation house was built. The boathouse that had been prominent in the pictures from a few years ago was all but gone. with only its moss-shrouded peak still rising a few inches above the water. The swamp had not been content to stop there. Almost a full third of the luxurious lawn had been swallowed up as well. It looked like Cade's men could run their boats right up onto the edge of the lawn, instead of having to tie off at the docks as they had planned. The soft glow of some kind of natural light, most probably candles or gas lanterns, could be seen in a few windows on the second floor. Otherwise, the plantation house and the surrounding grounds were dark, which was just as Cade had hoped.
TOC to Olson. TOC to Olson.
Go, TOC.
We've reached the edge of the grounds and are starting our advance. No resistance in sight. Wait five, then come in.
Roger, TOC. Olson out.
Logan stood in what once was the grand ballroom on the second floor of the decaying plantation house, looking out into the night through the open French doors. As always, he wore his hooded robe, his features all but lost in the shadows it created. Behind him, arrayed in a semicircle, were his six senior acolytes. Together they made up what was left of the famed Council of Nine.
Famed it will be.
He tightened his grip on the Spear of Longinus that he held in his right hand.
Now I have the power. Now I am invincible. Now is time for the world to know my name.
But first he had to deal with the Templars. And after that, there was still one more confrontation facing him.
Their advance unit triggered the wards 10 minutes ago. We can expect the full force of their attack at any moment.
Very well. Release the corpse hounds and prepare yourselves for battle. I will call forth some special reinforcements and join you shortly.
It is done.
One by one, the acolytes filed out of the room, each with a specific task to perform. The necromancer had known the Templars would come after them. He just hadn't believed they would find them so quickly. It had been less than 6 hours since his men had returned, bearing their precious cargo. A problem in Tennessee had cost them several hours, and had ended with 6 day troopers dead on the edge of some backwards highway in the midst of the Cumberland Plateau. Still, 6 hours had been more than enough time for him to call forth the power of the weapon now in his grasp. He knew that in time there would be so much more he could do, but for now, what little he had learned should be more than enough to deal with the damned knights, once and for all. He stepped through the French doors and outside onto the small balcony just beyond. The night air was redolent with the smell of the swamp and the decay of the house around him. Death and decay, those were his partners, and he reveled in their presence. He looked to the south, where a large thundercloud sat fat and heavy on the horizon.
That will do nicely.
He raised his arms out to his sides.
Imperius! Agdeu Esikim! Mortis!
From the tip of the spear, lightning shot suddenly skyward. In the distance, the storm turned toward him in response. The Blackhawks came swooping in over the trees like avenging angels, hovering over the front lawn just long enough to dispatch their cargo. And then, with the exception of the lead two birds, they retreated back out over the swamps to wait until they were needed. Olson and Duncan were in the first of the two choppers that had stayed behind. They circled above the property, using the high-intensity spotlight mounted under the nose of the bird to highlight threats for the ground force and communicating with them via radio. From their vantage point, they could see Cade and his men join up with Bravo Team. Fanning out, the group began its advance on the nearby buildings.
Look!
Duncan pointed. The door to the plantation house opened, and several individuals stepped out onto the porch. Duncan got a good look at them through the binoculars, and what he saw made his blood run cold. He'd seen those hooded robes before, worn by the sorcerers he and Cade had faced at Stones. He knew what power they had at their disposal. The battle was about to become bloody. Olson got on the radio to their commander.
Olson to TOC.
Go, Olson.
I count 5 hostiles in the porch. Repeat, 5 hostiles.
Understood. Give the challenge, then engage at will.
Duncan was already waiting by the switch, and when Olson gave him the signal, he turned the chopper's communication system to broadcast externally.
In the name of the Lord Almighty, I call upon you to relinquish your weapons and receive the mercy of Christ the King.
In response, one of the council members raised his fingers to his lips. The men in the Blackhawk could not hear the resulting whistle over the sound of the rotors, but the men on the ground clearly did. For a moment, nothing moved on the battlefield. And then, In a thundering rush, dark forms came pouring out from around the sides of the house and headed straight for the Templar formation. The first of the corpse hounds ran through an area of the lawn illuminated by the chopper spotlight. They were the size of Great Danes, but no living Dane ever looked like this. Their skin hung rotting on their frames, and their empty eye sockets seemed to blaze with an unholy light. They charged across the grounds with unnatural speed, moving unerringly toward the knights who were advancing on the plantation house.
Sword!
The men of both units drew their holy blades and met the oncoming charge straight on. High above, Olsen and the sniper in the other Blackhawk finally entered the fray. They targeted the council members still standing on the porch, taking out two of them with their first shots. Before the rest could respond to the threat, Olsen had fired again, striking a third. While he didn't think the second shot had been a fatal one, at least there were two less sorcerers for them to worry about. As the rest of the council members dove out of sight behind the portico columns, Olsen turned his attention to the battle below him, seeking new targets, firing again and again until he was forced to reload. The battle raged on. In the distance, the storm gathered momentum. Once he had secured control of the Tempest, Logan set the second half of his plan into motion. Calling on the power inherent in the spear, and adding to it his own dark arts, he reached savagely across the barrier into a realm long since forgotten by most men.
Immortus! Imperium Carnamactus! Mortis!
With the aid of his magic, he swept up several of the realm's denizens and pulled them back into his side of reality. Controlling them, he sent the creatures forth, hidden in the heart of the storm. Cade moved through the melee, Riley at his side. Grim determination was etched on his face as he moved, his blade flashing repeatedly in the moonlight. Each corpse brought him closer to the plantation house. The hounds were designed to slow them down, of that he was certain, and so he refused to give them what they wanted. With a corps of Echo Team at his back, he smashed his way through the ranks of the enemy. Cade was covered with blood and other unrecognizable substances, but he was otherwise unhurt. A Blackhawk roared overhead, its light dancing across the lawn and over the front steps. And in its glow, Cade saw a startling sight. Gabrielle stood on the steps, gesturing to him. He raised his sword to show he had seen her, and watched as she turned and disappeared inside the house. It was clear that she wanted him to follow. As chance or providence would have it, several quick shots from the helicopter above him cleared the last of the corpse hounds from his path. The way to the steps was open.
This way!
Inside the plantation house, they sheathed their swords and drew out their firearms. A double staircase immediately in front of them led up to the upper floors. At the top stood Gabrielle, waiting. Cade never hesitated. He charged up the steps, with Riley close behind. We encountered no one in the halls, so it was only a matter of moments before they found themselves led to the entrance to the grand ballroom on the second floor. Across the room stood Logan, the necromancer.
We got trouble.
Olsen inclined his head toward the window while he finished reloading his weapon. Duncan turned to see what he was referring to, and instantly wished he hadn't. A thick bank of storm clouds had appeared practically out of nowhere, moving faster than any earthbound wind could have carried them. And through a break in the clouds, they caught sight of the cause of that speed within their depths. Shapes writhed and rolled within the clouds, shapes that had no purpose for being on this God-given Earth. Clearly, they were some form of summoned being, but not one either Duncan, with his limited knowledge of such creatures, or Olsen, who'd faced more than his fair share, had ever seen before. They were a good 10 to 15 feet in length, and shaped, more than anything else, like manatees, except instead of front fins, they had fully functional arms complete with claws several inches in length. They had large, bulbous heads with human faces and gaping maws full of oversized teeth.
Their eyes are full of hatred.
Then, the specters were upon them. Logan turned to face them as they entered the room. In his hand, he held the spear, He was dressed in a long hooded robe, tied at the waist with a black sash. Cade recognized more than a few of the arcane symbols sewn onto its surface, and knew that this was not a man to be trifled with. But neither was he. Riley moved out to his left, his weapon securely aimed at their foe, making it difficult for the sorcerer to strike them both with one blow. The necromancer, however, didn't even acknowledge Riley's presence. His darkened hood concealed his features, but just the same, Cade could tell his gaze never wavered from him.
He said you would come.
The man's words set Cade's heart racing. As the Templar commander realized, the necromancer could only be referring to one being, the adversary.
Where is he?
Why are you here? Did you think you could defeat me?
Put down the spear. You will not be harmed if you do as you are told.
You and your pathetic ally. Do you really believe you are strong enough to face me?
Logan didn't wait for an answer. In a surprisingly lithe move, he swept the spear around in an arc and pointed it at Riley.
Arcanum levitus aeternum!
In the next instant, Riley was lifted up off the ground and tossed halfway across the room. Logan turned back toward Cade, returning the spear to his side. With his other hand, he reached up and threw back his hood, revealing his features for the first time. The right side of his face was a veritable ruin, his skin scarred from exposure to some kind of extreme heat. The flesh melted together and reformed into some hideous approximation of normalcy. Like Cade's, his right eye had not escaped harm, but where Cade's was left intact as a milky white orb, the necromancer's had been destroyed outright, leaving the empty socket to gape like an open wound in his face. A few remaining wisps of long white hair hung from his damaged scalp. The similarities between Cade's condition and that of the necromancer were too obvious to ignore.
Could this have been what the adversary had intended for me? Why didn't he finish the job? Put down the spear and step away from it!
Go ahead. Shoot me. You can't harm me, and you know it. What I did to your companion was child's play. As long as I am in possession of this, I am invincible.
Cade did know the rumors. He had heard the legends. He also knew that at least some of them regarding the spear were true. He had seen the power of the weapon firsthand. Yet he had little choice. His enemy could not, must not, retain control of the spear.
This is your last chance, Logan. Put down the weapon.
In obscurum ego mors ortus quod ater orbis terrarum permeus immortalis.
As he chanted, the head of the spear started to glow, a brilliant crimson in response. The storm and its fearsome passengers hit them in a rush. One moment the helicopter was above the estate in clear skies, the next it was encased in a maelstrom of horrific proportions, surrounded by clouds so thick that if it weren't for the instruments, the pilots would have been unable to determine which direction was up. As it was, they had their hands full, fighting against the gale force winds and struggling to keep the aircraft on station. In the back, Duncan and Olsen, strapped into their seats with safety webbing and seat belts, did their best to keep the specters away from the helicopter. Their gunfire only had marginal effect, however. The bullets seemed to skip off the creature's scaly hides, or were tossed away in the winds before they could reach their targets. Duncan looked at Olsen, and the same thought flashed in both their eyes.
The engines!
Cade had no intention of letting his enemy call forth any more of his infernal allies. He had to do something. But what? The necromancer was right. Cade couldn't harm him while he was in possession of the spear. Couldn't harm him. But that didn't mean that Cade couldn't harm the spear itself. The shot flew true, striking the wooden shaft of the spear a few inches below the metal shank that held the tip in place and splintering it into pieces. The head of the weapon flew off into the shadows behind the necromancer, leaving him holding a useless shaft of oak. But before Cade could end the confrontation with another well-placed bullet, a tremendous blow shook the house, sending them all to the floor. As soon as he understood they were going down, Duncan pulled himself into a tight ball, protecting the back of his neck with his hands, just as he'd been taught. One moment they were in the heart of the phantom clouds, the specters feasting on their engines, and the next they were plummeting through the huge glass walls of the conservatory, the air filled with flying glass and crumpled steel as the ground came up to meet them. he'd pushed himself up on his hands, just in time to see the necromancer disappear through a door in the back of the room. Hauling himself to his feet, he looked for Riley, who was just climbing to his knees, a thin trickle of blood seeping across his forehead. Kate ran over to help him.
Are you all right?
Yeah, I'm fine. I could see and hear, I just couldn't move. What the hell just happened?
I don't know, and I don't have time to find out. Logan escaped through the back door. I want you to grab the spear and get out of the house with it. Do whatever you need in order to keep it safe. I'm going after Logan. Get the spear. I'll meet you out front as soon as I can.
And with that, Cade ran off, following his enemy deeper into the house, leaving Riley to recover the artifact. Duncan came to with the straps of his seatbelt cutting into his chest and threatening to suffocate him. He was hanging upside down in the darkness, bruised and battered. He pressed the belt release with his left hand. As he moved to get up, he put his hand in a pool of something thick and wet. Fuel oil was his first thought, but when he got a good whiff of the substance, he corrected himself.
Blood.
The thought put more urgency in his movement. Climbing carefully into a crouch, he reached into the leg pocket of his coveralls and withdrew one of the standard-issue light sticks he carried on every mission. By its light, he could see Olsen still hanging above him, held in place by his safety straps. He could also see the wide stain on the front of the man's coveralls and the thick piece of shrapnel that had gone through them, his body armor, and finally, deep into his chest. With a tentative hand, he reached up to see if his companion was still alive. Logan plunged down the back steps and outside into the wall of fog he had summoned while on the run just moments before. With the loss of the spear had come a loss of power, and he knew this latest act of sorcery wouldn't last very long. He had to be undercover before it disappeared. With a sense of direction bred from years of familiarity, he headed for the chapel. He had to reach the other before they caught up with him. He would know what to do. He would help him recover the spear. He had to. To have come so far only to lose it now would be unthinkable. Logan couldn't understand what had gone wrong. His early alarm system had worked perfectly, letting him know the assault was on its way. He'd placed his troops, summoned reinforcements, the likes of which he had never been powerful enough to summon before, and had counterattacked before the Templars had even known what was happening. Yet somehow they had managed to breach his defenses. Everything he had worked for was in ruins. Reaching the chapel, the necromancer hauled the door open and stepped inside. The chapel was lit with the same eerie red glow that always accompanied the other's presence, but even as the necromancer made his way down the center aisle, it slowly began to fade away, until he was left standing before the altar, alone in the darkness. The other had abandoned him for his failure. Unable to free Olsen from the twisted webbing that held him in place, Duncan was forced to support Olsen's body with one hand and slice through the webbing and seatbelt with his combat knife. He caught his companion's body as it dropped and carefully hauled him out of the wreckage of the chopper. He found a relatively clear piece of floor and laid him gently down upon it. Now that he was free of the crew cabin, he could see that the chopper had smashed through the ceiling of the conservatory and buried itself in the wall that attached it to the plantation house. A quick look at the front of the Black Hawk let him know there was no chance that either of the pilots had survived, so he returned to Olsen's side, only to find him conscious. Olsen's hand reached out to Duncan.
It's all right. You're okay.
Duncan knelt over his companion and did what he could to block his view of the large hunk of glass protruding from the man's chest. It was clear to Duncan that his companion didn't have long to live. A man lay dying, and he had the power to save him, power that had been given to him by the Lord above. To ignore that power, to pretend it didn't exist simply because he didn't understand it, was not honoring the Lord as he'd believed for so long, but denying him. Cade had it right, Duncan realized. It wasn't where the power came from, but how it was used that was important. He made his decision.
Listen to me, Nick. I'm going to remove the piece of glass from your chest and see what I can do about that wound. It's not going to be easy. You've got to stay with me. Fight to stay alive. Do you hear me?
Olsen stared at him glassy-eyed, and Duncan was afraid he was already past the point of understanding. But finally, he gave a short nod.
All right. On the count of three.
Duncan wrapped his hands around the shard of glass. He made certain he had a good grip on it, ignoring the way it bit into the flesh of his hands. He could deal with that later, after he managed to stabilize Olsen.
One, two, three!
The blood flowed in waves. Duncan brought his own bleeding hands over the massive wound in Olsen's chest. The necromancer fell to his knees.
No! Don't go! You can defeat them! You can recover the spear! We can still succeed!
Logan could feel his power waning. Whatever gifts the other had provided were disappearing along with their provider, and he was being left with only the petty knowledge he had gained on his own in the years before the other's coming. His dreams of glory were fading with each passing second.
Logan!
He had only moments before his enemy was upon him. He looked around frantically for a weapon. Cade pushed the door open fully, letting the moonlight illuminate the aisle before him that led into the heart of the chapel. He could see an altar in the shadows ahead, but no sign of Gabrielle.
Gabby!
When no answer came, he stepped inside, waiting a moment on the other side of the threshold to let his eyes adjust to the dim light. Cautiously, he started down the center aisle toward the altar. The necromancer charged out of the shadows and swung a large metal candle holder at Cade's head. Cade ducked beneath the attack, allowing the makeshift club to pass harmlessly over his head. Adrenaline surging, Cade went on the offensive. His enemy countered by continuing his turn and coming around full circle, the heavy base of the candle holder sweeping in at foot level. The necromancer rushed in, shoving the base of the candle holder at Cade's face. Cade threw himself backward into one of the pews. The necromancer lifted the heavy weapon over his head for another strike. That was all Cade needed to turn the tide in his favor. Diving out of the pew, Cade struck him hard, driving his shoulder into Logan's solar plexus in a makeshift tackle. The pain of the blow forced Logan to drop the candle holder. Gripping the man's robes with one hand, Cade rained blows down on the necromancer's unprotected face. From somewhere inside the necromancer's robes, a knife appeared, and he slashed at Cade with it. The move forced Cade to let go of his hold on the other man's robes. Knowing he needed more room if he was to evade further attacks, Cade stepped out into the open area in front of the altar. Logan rushed him. As the knife came in, Cade stepped inside its reach, smashing the hard edge of both hands against the inside of the other man's forearm. Keeping his left hand on his attacker's wrist, pinning the blade away from him, Cade used the ridge of his other hand in the opposite direction to strike the necromancer hard along the line of his neck, just below the ear. Cade stepped forward and heaved him bodily over his shoulder. Cade quickly recovered his sword and stalked back to where the necromancer lay cowering on the steps of the altar. Staring down at his foe, weapon in hand, Cade felt his rage spiral out of control.
This is the man who masterminded the attacks against the Order. This is the man who was responsible for the death of over 100 of my brethren. This is the man who cooperated with the adversary.
That last thought was enough to shatter what little control Cade had left. This man deserved to die. Cade raised his sword. Cade twisted slightly and managed to turn the blade just in time. Cade barely noticed Logan. He had eyes only for his dead wife, who was standing a few feet behind the altar.
You need him, Cade.
Like hell I do. The world would be a better place without him. Justice demands his death.
Then justice will have to take a back seat. You will need him at some point in the future. I can see it. Without him, your vengeance will go unclaimed.
Cade considered her remarks, knowing as he did so that if it hadn't been for her previous warning, they might never have known about the traitor within their ranks. But still, he wanted to know more.
What will I need him for? And when?
I don't know.
You don't know, or you can't say.
She didn't respond. Motion at the door caught his attention. Several knights entered the chapel, their weapons at the ready.
Sir!
Here! The room's secure!
Cade turned back to face his wife, only to find she had gone as suddenly and as mysteriously as she had come. But she had accomplished her end. The necromancer would live, at least for the time being. Others in the Order would turn their skills upon him, and eventually he would tell them all he knew. At that point, his fate would be up to those in charge. But for the moment, he would live. Cade turned his defeated prisoner over to his second-in-command, and watched as the man was searched and secured by the other soldiers. Riley himself filled Cade in on what was happening.
The complex is under control. The last of the council members have been rounded up. A few of them are even talking. And with their help, we hope to have the rest of the missing artifacts rounded up before long.
Casualties?
18 dead, 12 wounded.
Riley hesitated, obviously searching for words.
Just say it.
The chopper Olsen and Duncan were in went down, smashed straight into the conservatory. Olsen took a piece of shrapnel deep in the chest.
Is he dead?
No, boss. That's a problem. By all rights, he should be, yet it looks like he's gonna be all right. Whatever Duncan did when he pulled him out of the wreckage saved his life. Some of the men are calling it a miracle.
Let them call it what they want. Just make sure Olsen gets what he needs.
Yes, sir.
As Riley turned away, Cade reached out and grabbed his arm.
Keep Duncan close, just in case.
You can count on it, sir.
As Riley escorted the prisoner out of the chapel, Cade remained behind. He walked down the center aisle and took a seat in the first row of pews, facing the altar.
Gabby! Are you still here?
Only the silence answered him. Using his sight, he tried to find some trace of her lingering on the other side. Where in the living world, the chapel had lost its glory and had become just a small, dark corner in a larger, darker world, in the beyond, a startling transformation was taking place. Even as he watched, a golden light blossomed in the center of the room, slowly driving away the darkness and the shadows until it shone with the faith that had once infused its walls, a faith that was slowly forcing its way back in. The room was empty, but it was not without power. And in that moment, Cade's heart echoed that brilliance. He found himself hoping that one day the burden of vengeance would be lifted from him as well, and that he too could feel such a cleansing. But for the time being, he had a vow that still needed to be fulfilled. Turning off his sight and returning to the real world, he took one last look around. The chapel seemed empty, but deep inside, he knew the truth. After all these years, he'd been so close. Raising his head, he stared into the shadows at the back of the room.
Run. Run while you can. One day I will find you, and on that day, there will be a reckoning.
Cade hefted his sword and stared at the word etched into its blade.
A reckoning indeed.
With that, he turned away and walked back up the aisle and into the rising dawn outside.
The Templar Chronicles, The Heretic, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2010, Joseph Nassis. Production copyright 2011, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Published by arrangement with Joseph Nassis. All rights reserved. Performed by Richard Rowan, David Coyne, Terrence Aselford, Stephen Carpenter, Mort Shelby, Bradley Smith, Michael Glenn, Thomas Penny, Alyssa Wilmoth, Thomas Keegan, Nanette Savard, Tim Carlin, Ken Jackson, Alexander Strain, Drew Kopis, Eric Messner, Johann Detweiler, and Joe Brack. Directed by Johann Detweiler. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Johann Detweiler. Story adapted for graphic audio by Johann Detweiler. If you enjoyed The Heretic, be sure to look for the continuation of the Templar Chronicles, coming soon in graphic audio. Also, be sure to look for Peter V. Brett's The Demon Cycle and Brett Weeks' The Lightbringer Trilogy, all available in graphic audio at Road Stops Everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our titles, as well as free downloads and podcasts. Now, keep listening for exciting previews of other titles in Graphic Audio. Graphic Audio presents Peter V. Brett's fantasy masterpiece, The Demon Cycle. Book 1, The Warded Man. Experience a world filled with hardship and pain. By day, humanity struggles to carve out an existence in a land that wants nothing more than to see it fall. By night, the broken rabble cowers behind magical wards, its only protection from the relentless bloodthirst of the demon plague. But just as the light threatens to fade away forever, and shadow is poised to shroud all in its wake, three survivors will band together to do battle with the savage horde. Led by a mysterious, fearsome warrior known only as the Warded Man, humanity will wage a bloody war against the creatures of the night. A war that could bring it to the very brink of destruction, or capture its final salvation. Don't miss the savage action of The Warded Man, Parts 1 and 2. Coming soon in Graphic Audio.
Trouble?
Yes. From someone I owe a whole lot to. Seems he's in trouble and is wondering if I might be able to help him out.
What kind of trouble?
He doesn't say. But since he's asking for my help, I suspect it's the kind of trouble that comes out of the end of a gun.
When Smoke receives an unexpected telegram from an old acquaintance, he will ride into the battle of his life.
You're going to conduct some more military operations against Captain King's Ranch. I will expect you to begin a campaign of harassment and interdiction. You'll find cowboys working in your area, and you will kill them.
But the one thing Major Jack Brandt didn't count on was the vengeful hand of Smoke Jensen.
How do you fight against such evil? When someone wishes to spread terror, there is nothing you can do to stop them.
Sure there is. We can give terror right back at them. They're killing our people. We will kill theirs.
In this one, lots of bad men die. Don't miss the gruesome bloodshed in The Mountain Man number 33, Destiny of the Mountain Man. Available now in Graphic Audio.
If you can't find that Graphic Audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different Graphic Audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.